If you're serving overseas, it's natural that soldiers would want to experience the familiar tastes of home. But not mom's cooking, something more like this.
Smell the coffee. Mmm, and the cinnamon rolls too at Cinnabon's.
I've got the new Pizza Hut 4 for all. And you can all get what you want.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
The U.S. military has made it a point to make places like Taco Bell and Cinnabon fixtures at the major bases in Iraq and Afghanistan. But in order to get your chalupa, you have to have someone serving it to you. And that means more than 70,000 international civilian employees, cooks, cleaning staff, cashiers, electricians, even hairstylists. They're called officially third country nationals. And Sarah Stillman says they don't have a lot of protection in their workplaces. Sarah Stillman, visiting scholar at NYU's Arthur L. Carter Journalism Institute. And she wrote about what she calls the Pentagon's invisible army in this week's New Yorker. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning.
The invisible army, what is the official position of these workers with the American government?
Well, they're doing all kinds of service work on U.S. bases. Like you said, everything you can think of, from cooking to cleaning, all of the latrines. If you think of all the various logistics jobs that are there to be done, some of which are very dangerous, driving across some of the world's more dangerous roads to deliver, big truckloads of chalupas, and other jobs like, even doing manicures and pedicures for soldiers on some of the larger bases.
Who pays them?
Who pays them? Well, it's a very convoluted subcontracting chain. So, we're paying the U.S. government, the taxpayer, is paying some of these very large companies you've probably heard of, like KBR, based in Houston. And then KBR is paying a subcontractor in, say, Kuwait, who is then often paying a local recruiter in these workers' home countries, places like India and Nepal and Sri Lanka and Uganda and Sierra Leone.
You describe a number of abuses that occurs to these these workers. You say that they go through that they're injured sometimes without being compensated, that they're sometimes subjected to sexual assault. And at one point you describe what they're doing as akin to indentured servitude. What do you mean?
Well, there are a lot of these workers who, in their home countries, to get the jobs, they pay a labor broker somewhere between $1,000 and even $4,000 in order to get the jobs, and often they're promised huge salaries that once they get there, they'll make back the recruiting fee in a month or two. I tell several stories in the piece about that phenomenon, that when they get there, they arrive in Iraq and find out they'll be making sometimes as little as $250 a month serving U.S. troops in situations often of great danger. And so many of them have to work almost an entire year or even more to simply make the money back that they paid to get there.
Sarah Stillman is a visiting scholar at NYU's Arthur Carter Journalism Institute. Her article about this appears in this week's New Yorker. Sarah, the Pentagon's response, to the extent that they responded to you, is that they have a zero-tolerance policy for any kind of abuse, any of the things that you speak about in your article. They say there's zero tolerance for that, and they've let the private contractors and subcontractors know that they have guidelines for humane treatment.
Absolutely. And I think the real trouble here is that accountability is very hard to come by. I mentioned earlier the subcontracting chains are often very convoluted. And so even though I think many, many people in the U.S. military, want to and have tried to crack down on this, it's quite hard to track it all the way through because, many of these contractors have very little oversight and there's very little transparency about, what's actually happening down on the ground when you have so many levels of subcontracting out, sometimes, four or five or even six tiers.
We're talking to Sarah Stillman, who's a visiting scholar at NYU's Arthur L. Carter Journalism Institute. Her piece on the third country workers in Iraq and Afghanistan is in the latest issue of The New Yorker. Sarah, one of the ironies here is that KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root. Brown and Root was the original contractor that built the port in Saigon under the Johnson administration back when the Pentagon paid for all the support workers. They were actually in uniform. Now they're out of uniform. They're basically people who are handled by these labor brokers. Is it the case that the Pentagon is basically plugging itself into guest worker brokers that countries like Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, who are famous for rounding up guest workers in their own countries, have used with all kinds of human rights abuses in the past?
That's exactly it. You've pinned it exactly, which is that, you know, essentially these systems are already in place, piping workers from some of the world's poorest countries into the Middle East. And essentially that system has been rerouted onto U.S. bases with very little kind of legal intervention. And the extent of contracting in these two wars is unprecedented, and as is the role of foreign workers that we hear so little about.
Does the Pentagon have any responsibility for protecting them?
The argument is yes, insofar as, you know, these workers are, and the system that brings them in is essentially funded by the U.S. taxpayer. And, you know, and I think, you know, that creates a level of responsibility that, you know, is very real.
Well, Sarah, you know, you describe in your piece food riots, one in particular, but the events that you describe are rather large disturbances, one might say. Wouldn't that bring the attention down of whomever is there, whatever military official is overseeing that base?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite shocking that, you know, one of the major riots I write about that was previously unreported was a group of, you know, as the military police conveyed it to me, more than 1,200 Indian and Nepali workers who were rioting because they said they weren't getting enough food. They were held in their own subcontractor camps. So there was there's one of the largest bases in Iraq, Camp Victory, the Victory Base Complex, is a very large place, almost like a mini city. And on it are these smaller guarded compounds. In which the subcontractors, who are often, in this case, a PPI, a company based in Dubai, so it was because the workers are kept on their own in this case and were held in their own kind of facilities, both living-wise and also they had their own dining facility, many soldiers had no idea what was going on. And again, as I mentioned in the piece, a lot of the workers view the soldiers as their sole kind of protectors in these cases. It's just often the word doesn't get out.
So these workers, you're saying, have nowhere to turn when they think that they've been abused or mistreated.
That's exactly it. The methods of recourse are very hard for them to figure out if they exist at all.
Do they exist?
Well, I think the law on this is very unclear, and I've spoken to so many, you know, U.S. contracting officers who can't seem to answer the question, and thus it's hard to imagine that many of these workers often, you know, they don't speak English and they have no idea how they would access a lawyer, for instance. So,
they can't figure it out if you can't figure it out. Yeah,
exactly.
Sarah Stillman, visitor scholar at NYU's Arthur L. Carter Journalism Institute. Her piece about what she calls Pentagon's invisible army appears in this week's New Yorker. She's talking about the 70,000 or so international civilian employees who serve bases overseas.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.